Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila and Leo will be with us in a minute. Tonight we're here to bring you some news, and I'm not sure about our interview, whether Leo has that queued up and ready to go. Turn that light off. No, he just said the tape isn't working apparently. At the studio where we did have the interview, it went on the air live, and there's a recording machine there that's in the system. But apparently that's broken down. We were having trouble with it several times, and I guess now it's completely kaput. So hopefully we can get that fixed and bring that interview with you, to you at another time. It was really an excellent interview. I feel sad about it because I think many people would enjoy it. It was with Gail Corey Tonson. And she talked about the Palestinian issue, of course, something that's very dear to her heart because she's Palestinian herself. And so she talks about that. And she also is a reporter for the...
Interview won't be on.
I know. I was just explaining it wouldn't be on and what she talked about. And she also talked about a proposed wind factory off of Nantucket. And the reason she got involved in that is that she's a reporter for Indian Times, for the indigenous people of New York State, American Indians. And the wind farm, or she calls it a wind factory, and I think that's better named, is approved and is going to be used. The stimulus money, Obama's stimulus money, is paying for it, and it's going to be off the island of Nantucket, which is the place where it is was once land of the people of the Dawn, and that land is sacred to them. It's the part of it has been was a burial ground, and this wind factory is going to be located there. And so when they had the hearings, of course, the indigenous peoples, I think it's the Wampanoags, who are the people of the Dawn, opposed this because of the sacredness of the site. And they could have put it other places, but they insisted on putting it there, even though many, many people, not only the indigenous people, the Wampanoags, but others were opposed to it. But it went through anyway, and she spoke about that. But if we ever get the system working, we'll have her on again and be lucky enough to bring it to you. And what do we have here?
Okay. We've got five big stories that I think we should go. This is interesting. Attack on Iran, imminent, warns Fidel Castro.
And that's the second article we've seen on that.
And almost all Exxon Valdez cleanup crew are dead.
Really? And how many years ago was that, Leo?
About 20 years ago. That was 85. I think it was 85. I'm in the
80s. Let's read that first, because...
this one here?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think Obama is deliberately protracting Gulf oil disasters. Quite important, too.
Yeah.
Let's take this out.
And this is a little, video. It's a video.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the dangers of dispersants.
Right, let's
boy.
Okay, let's put that on. It's only a 2 minute. Yeah.
Diagnose what the problems are, because BP will not give them the names of the chemicals that are in the dispersants. However, we know that they're the same types of illnesses that people reported in Alaska. Now, the average lifespan of a person who did cleanup on the Exxon Valdez is 51 years old. Almost all those people who did work on the Exxon Valdez are now dead. And BP still here once again is big oil not giving the information to the doctors and the healthcare officials. A county nurse was not given permission to go on to the BP property. When she finally did that, the people who work at BP who were coming to see her were only allowed to get aspirin from her, and they were told that they only could go to the to the BP doctors if they wanted to get treated.
President Obama touched on issues in particular in the Gulf today, and I want to play this. Listen.
So far, we have seen that on shore, we are not seeing huge elevations in toxins in the air or in the water. But that may not be the case out where people are actually doing the work. And we've got to make sure that we are providing all the protections that are necessary.
Do you think the administration is doing enough to help people get through this?
Well, I think the administration, frankly, has been incredible.
Yeah, that was enough. They didn't want to say administration has been choked.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's
pretty scary.
That's pretty frightening, yeah.
It sort of reminds me of the 911 situation.
Yeah.
When the first responders, they've had terrible illnesses.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are dead.
Yeah.
And suffering horribly because of chemicals and asbestos and all kinds of things that were in the air.
Yeah.
So, let me get back to our site. We somehow lost the
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody's
bear with us, folks.
Yeah, that's frightening.
Yeah.
I mean, all of the, thousands of
these 51 years old.
Hey, these poor bastards that are out there in the Gulf now working, I mean, they've already been exposed, so it's like, traffic on the site tonight.
There it is. Okay.
All right. Yeah, so we're going to go to this other one. Israeli nuclear espionage, the art of America at risk or fun and profit.
Israeli nuclear espionage. This week, newspapers around the world received reports and signed documents from South Africa. The report said that in 1975, Israel agreed to sell South Africa nuclear weapons. South Africa then released an arms agreement signed by the current Israeli President Shimon Peres. This is the document heard around the world. Meetings are being held in New York to set up a conference for 2012 to guarantee that the Middle East is nuclear-free. Israel has been informed that it will not be able to hide behind denials and that the nuclear arsenal put on the sale block by Israel in 1975 and nobody knows how many times since has to go. When Israel was finally caught, it changed at least one part of the game, but the game will go on.
Bastards. Let's see
what else it has to say.
Can't trust these bastards. I mean, these guys are sick. What does it mean? Neither
South Africa
jumped on me.
Nor Israel is admitting that the nukes were delivered. General belief said that they were. A real shock to Nelson Mandela when he took office, from prisoner of apartheid to commander of a nuclear power. What is proven by this is that Israel, even 35 years ago a nuclear state, in direct violation of numerous international treaties. It also proves that Israel offers nukes to South Africa, a rogue nation under sanctions that covered not only any weapons, but trade as well. This made Israel a criminal state and Mr. Peres a war criminal.
More than that, it makes any aid America gives Israel illegal. If Israel is nuclear, which is now official, and in violation of international treaties, just as with Iraq and Iran, then America has to demand inspections and disarmament. There is no choice. This is the law. Law for Iran, law for Iraq. It's also law for Israel. Israel has expected this day for years. The U.S. can't give or sell arms to any country with an illegal nuclear arsenal. Worse than this, we are sworn to defend the world from any nation that would spread nuclear weapons, a charge made by the South African government, one that has been made before, but can no longer be ignored.
How did Russia get the bomb? Americans gave Russia the technologies, not just Americans, but scientists. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, Morris Cohen, Martin Sobel, David Greenglass, Klaus Fuchs, and Harry Gold. This was a couple of years before the establishment of the State of Israel, or we would have called them Israeli Americans. They believed that America couldn't be trusted and that infamous mass murderer Joseph Stalin could. From this point on, spying against America, everything from secret weapons to defense plans, everything America depended on to stay safe was stolen and sold to Russia, China, or North Korea by spy organizations run out of Israel.
The Rosenbergs died executed for their crimes. They were communists and believed in what they were doing. Today, this isn't the case. America's military secrets are being peddled around the world for money to keep the world on edge and have built Israel into a military superpower based on stolen American technology. And we are told a nuclear arsenal built from stolen American design and fueled with 2.5 tons of misplaced plutonium, one of the great secrets of our era.
America's nuclear program, Livermore Labs, Oak Ridge, Hanford, Rocky Flats, Fernald, Pantax, Portsmouth, Mound, Pinellas, Savannah River, Sandia Labs, Los Alamos, and more, needed to enrich uranium, design, and fabricate nuclear weapons is vast, covering enough area to encompass some states, tens of thousands of employees, hundreds of billions of dollars in physical facilities so large they could be seen from the moon are involved. Yet, by 1975, not only was Israel armed to the teeth with nukes, a tiny country, but had so many they could sell them on the open market like gumdrops.
The only possible answer was that America was supplying Israel with weapons-grade fissionable material, plutonium or uranium-235. A number of investigators and whistleblowers have tracked these shipments to NUMEC at Pennsylvania and in Pennsylvania and to France. I have spoken with some who were involved in the investigation. No report has been made, and everyone involved has been discredited or silenced. Is it a rumor, or did Israel kill the Kennedys for trying to create a nuclear-free Middle East? As this is the only very strong motivation for the assassinations, it has never been made into a movie or filmed on a TV series or documentary. I'm putting my money on this. John F. Kennedy may have signed his own death warrant when he sent the signal, final demand to Israel President David Ben-Gurion on July 5, 1963, demanding inspections of the Dimona nuclear facility. Ben-Gurion resigned rather than receive the letter, and before a new demand could reach Tel Aviv, Kennedy was dead.
The world is a funny place. With 95% of the world's weapons design and development being done in the U.S., why is it that American technologies show up in enemy hands continually? Could the long history of Israel spying against the U.S. be involved? Every advanced technology given by the U.S. to Israel is reverse-engineered and peddled to Venezuela, North Korea, China, or the highest bidder. Any technology not offered is stolen. The game? Just as with peddling nukes to South Africa back in 1975, it's all about business.
The only reason Israel is on our radar is that their games played on the American stage with their puppet networks like Fox News and their political hacks, McCain, Lieberman, Waxman, Schumer, and so many more, countless more, are ready to send a generation of Americans.
Oh, sorry.
No, you went down. A generation of American kids to war against Iran on the word of a proven liar. Israel, proven liar over peddling nukes, proven liar over settlements in our Palestine, proven liar over Iraq's nuke bombs program, and lies told and retold by the master storytellers who daily reinvent themselves as victims. Maddox O'Cathale is an educator and widely published writer based in Japan. To read more of his writings, go to Cathale, C-A-T-H-A-I-L. You know, just
or Cathale.
Writing and Analysis.
Capo.
Yeah, it's
the name. I don't know how he pronounces his name.
Writing and Analysis. Just put that in. Writing and Analysis.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let's see, what else we got here?
Gotta go back. What else we have?
Oh, this one I wanted to read. Obama is deliberately protracting Gulf oil disaster.
Mm. If you were president of the United States and you see the Gulf wildlife are dying and fishermen and tourist business are suffering from the worst environmental disaster in U.S. history, wouldn't you do everything human possible to help? I would. I would be down on the beach with my sleeves rolled up to help with the cleanup, picking up tar balls and cleaning oil from seabirds. Instead, Obama has turned down 13 countries' offers to help clean up the BP oil spill. The Dutch were the first to offer assistance that, if accepted, would have cleaned up the spill in a matter of weeks. Frustrated by the federal government's inaction and BP's ineffectiveness, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal took action and got oil-fighting vacuum barges to remove the oil. But then the Coast Guard shut down all 16 barges last Wednesday, claiming their operation needed to be halted until inspections and certifications could be done.
Oh, there's something wrong here. Something desperately wrong. Something
I don't understand it.
Wrong.
Ooh, I don't know. We're not getting the rest of this article.
No,
taking a while, folks.
Oh, son of a bitch, you gotta be a...
I don't know whether we can get this now. Just give us a few minutes for trying.
Yeah. It looks like it's just, for some reason, having difficulty transferring.
Yeah, transferring data.
So, it'll come.
No, we'll wait a few minutes. But that's a little bit scary.
In the meantime, why don't you read that one about the one that gave us a friend of ours who listens to our show regularly. His name is Nick. And Nick...
he does a little research on his own.
Yeah, he does quite a bit of research. But he had a couple of articles here that were really quite mind-boggling. Mind-blowing, I should say. And one is the...
which one?
This one here. It's a little bit long. But,
I have some of it highlighted.
This one here. This is quite fascinating. It's short.
This is from InfoWars.
Yeah.
No, that's the one. That isn't the one I'm interested in. Let's see.
This is the other one. I was thinking that this one here. Very short, but this is quite frightening. I did not know that the bailout was. I was told from the mainstream news and everything else, everybody else. It seemed to me that the cost of bailout hits a whopping. I thought it was $2.4 trillion. Okay.
Yeah.
And that 2.4 was monies that were given by the Fed to the outside or out of country banks. All right, the Bank of Scotland and Barclays and all these others. So and Deutsche Bank. But as it turns out, this was from Infowars.com, and Prison Planet, Joseph Watson, and he's usually right on about a lot of things. And according to the watchdog overseeing the federal government's financial bailout program, the full exposure since 2007 amounts to a whopping $23.7 trillion, or $80,000 for every American citizen. The last time we were able to get a measure of the total cost of the bailout, it stood at a whopping around $8.5 trillion. But 8 months down the line, and that figure has almost tripled. The $23.7 trillion figure comprises about 50 initiatives and programs set up by the Bush-Obama administrations as well as the Federal Reserve, according to the Associated Press. A testimony which will be delivered to the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee tomorrow by Neil Barsi. Now, remember, this was published on July 20th, 2009, and this was something I missed because I usually check these InfoWars. But in testimony which will be delivered in the House, which I didn't, was, you got to remember, this is 2009, the Government Reform Committee tomorrow, Neil Barofsky, the Inspector General of the TARP, which is the bailout, will tell Congress that the Treasury Department has repeatedly failed to adopt recommendations aimed at making the TARP program more accountable and transparent. According to Barofsky, taxpayers are in the dark as to who has received the money and what they are doing with it.
That's right. We don't know.
Yeah, as we have repeatedly highlighted, the destination of some $2 trillion in TARP. See, that was the one that I read about.
Mm-hmm.
$2 trillion in TARP funds was the subject of a lawsuit filed by Bloomberg. That's what I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Late last year, after the Fed refused to disclose the recipients. The suit is still ongoing as Bloomberg attempted to discover names of private financial institutions that received the money. Now, again, this is ongoing because this was back in 2009, okay?
This wind factory that Gail was talking about off of Nantucket, number one, it was a no-bid contract.
It was awarded
to some company.
Yep.
And it was paid for with TARP money.
TARP
money.
So it's all crooks.
It's all crooks. Money.
It's all corruption.
I don't go for these no-bid contracts.
No, it's all corruption, and it's quite frightening. But it says American people will ultimately pick up the tab as their dollar is devalued because the Fed lends the money from its own balance sheet or essentially just prints more money, as a San Francisco Chronicle article explained last year. Wages will not keep pace with inflation, and if we add to the equation the raft of new tax being introduced by the Obama administration, the consequences are clear: another lowering of the living standards of millions of middle-class Americans. Meanwhile, Henry Paulson, one of the chief architects of the bailout, and a man who committed financial terrorism by threatening the Congress with martial law and food riots if they didn't pass the initial TARP package, brazenly pockets $200,000 in Goldman Sachs profit tax-free while handling out billions in...
How does he get that?
Well, I don't know. He was getting that. He used to be the chairman of Goldman Sachs.
Hmm.
Right?
He got more than $200,000.
Well, it says $200,000. Brazenly pockets $200,000. Okay? Not from stock options. Just because it bailed him out.
Just because?
Yeah. But this guy's supposedly worth $300 million. That's his net worth.
Wow.
Imagine that.
No, I can't imagine.
Yeah, that's what Paulson's
worth. That's too much money for anyone.
Well, Paulson's a crook. All right? Handing out billions and ill-gotten gains to his bankster buddies. All this after he pulled the bait and switch by changing the entire focus of the bailout from buying up toxic debt to giving money directly to financial institutions. We dread to think what the bailout figure will be in another 8 months. And this was a year ago. Remember that this article was written.
Yeah.
Will it triple again to $70 trillion? How about $100 trillion? The only thing that can bring an end to the wanton looting is Ron Paul's bill to audit the Fed, which has received overwhelming support in the House but is being blocked by the bought and paid for traitors in the Senate, who would rather see a continuation of the grand larceny rather than the real accountability and transparency. And it said, watch this CND discussion of $24 trillion, most of it on YouTube videos. And, all right, but this is frightening. I mean, this is absolutely staggering.
Yeah, how much?
I mean, we have no idea. I have to find out and follow up on this. And
find out where the money went.
I wonder if Paulson might, maybe he could have, Joseph Watson.
I thought it was Kurt Niemann.
He must have done a follow-up on this.
Oh, and this article's not coming up.
No,
they can't download the data.
Can you
For some reason, we can't get the data on that projecting.
There's a big problem.
Yeah.
The program problem. Okay, I'm going to have to close that. Let's It'll take a few minutes to close. Okay, we're going to... I wanted to read another one.
This one is too small. I can't see that.
Well, that one's too long.
Large areas of Arizona are now part of the Mexican narco state. This is by Kurt Nemo. If you live in southern Arizona, now is the time to move if you can. Mexican drug runners and executioners armed with automatic weapons now control three counties stretching from the border to Phoenix. We are outgunned, we are outmanned, and we don't have the resources here locally to fight this, admitted the Pino County Sheriff Paul Babo during a news conference last week in Casa Grande. We are three counties deep. How is that you can see the picture like this? Not Americans with semi and fully automatic rifles. How is that okay? A large area once used for family hiking and off-road vehicles now has government signs warning residents of drug and human smugglers. Night vision cameras have photographed cartel members with military arms. I can't see, Leo, if you do that.
Well, I can't.
Well, just wait.
Okay.
With military arms delivering drugs to vehicles along Highway 8. Last week, Fox News reported that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has closed part of the Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge on the Arizona border due to the danger posed by Mexican narco-terrorists and human smugglers. Critics say the United States is, in effect, giving a major strip of the Southwest back to Mexico. Police are hunted down and killed in the narco corridor. Sheriff Babo said an ambush last month mirrored military tactics. 5 weeks ago, Deputy Louis Purcell was ambushed and shot as he tracked six drug smugglers. In 2005, Representative Tom Tancredo, Colorado Republican of the time, chairman of the Congressional Immigration Reform Caucus, denounced the Mexican military for escorting drug smugglers across the border. In May, it was reported that elements of the Mexican army are colluding with the Sinaloa cartel, which is locked in battle for the territory of Juarez. In 2006, Border Patrol Union President T.J. Bonner detailed incidents in which U.S. agents were chased and fired upon in Texas by what he characterized as Mexican soldiers operating inside U.S. borders. Bonner testified before the House Homeland Security Investigation Subcommittee. The Mexican military routinely violates the U.S. border. In 2006, Border Patrol officers acknowledged that over the past decade, the Department of Homeland Security has reported 231 incursions along the border, including 63 in Arizona. Homeland Security defines an incursion as an unauthorized crossing by Mexican military or police, or a suspected drug or people smugglers dressed in uniforms. Babo said he doesn't believe the drug cartel problems will be solved when SB 1070 becomes law or with President Obama's promise of 1,200 troops spread out among four border states. On July 18, 2010, Arizona Republican Senator John Kyle told an audience in North Tempe Tea Party Town Hall meeting that during a private one-on-one meeting with Obama in the Oval Office, he was told that if he was to secure the border, Republicans would have no reason to support comprehensive immigration reform. In other words, the legalization of illegal aliens currently in the country. Southern Arizona is now unofficially part of the Mexican narco state. Obama does not plan to address the problem because he intends to use it as a political football in order to push through legislation to legalize millions of people who have entered the country illegally, go on welfare rolls, and bankrupt many states. The massive influx of illegal aliens is part of a plan by the global elite to erode the sovereignty of the United States under the rubric of the North American Union and flood the country with low-wage workers that will ultimately reduce the living standards of American workers.
That's pretty sick. Yep, that's what's
pretty going on. Pretty sick, folks, yeah.
This is something, this is by Fidel Castro, actually, filed under Foreign Affairs.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, this is Foreign Affairs. Okay. Political Theatrics is the name of this website. But it says, the first three paragraphs really make no sense, but it starts, last Friday, June 25th, an international press agency known for the attention to details in this report published a statement by the Navy commander of the elite corps of Guardians of the Islamic Revolution, General Al-Fadawi, warning that if the United States and its allies inspected Iranian ships in international waters, they will have their response in the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. The information was taken from the local news agency, Mehr of Iran. According to the press dispatch, that news agency reported that Fadawi added that the Navy of the Revolutionary Guards, our guardians rather, currently has hundreds of vessels equipped with missile launchers. We're looking at a war. The information produced approximately at the same time of that Grama published, or perhaps before, seemed at some points in exact copy of Reflections, elaborated on Thursday, June 24th, and ran by the paper on Friday, the 25th. The coincidence can be explained by the simple use of logical reasoning. I was completely unaware of what the Iranian local agency had published. This is Fidel Castro talking now. I have absolutely no doubt that as soon as the American and Israeli warships are deployed, alongside the rest of the American military vessels positioned off the Iranian coast, and they try to inspect the first merchant ship from that country, there will be a massive launching of missiles in both directions. At that moment, exactly, a terrible war will begin. It's not possible to estimate how many vessels will be sunk or from what country. Knowing the truth timely is the most important thing for our people. Oh, this is written for his own people. It doesn't matter if almost everybody, I dare say 99 9/10% or more of my compatriots, instinctively cling to the hopes and agree with my sincere wishes to be wrong. I have talked to people close to me, and I have also received news from many noble, selfless, and hardworking people who have read my reflections and do not challenge my considerations in the least, but rather absorb, believe, and swallow my reasoning through a dry throat. However, they immediately go back to the task to which they devote their energies. This is precisely what we expect of our compatriots. I don't know what he's talking about here.
Well, anyway, he's talking.
He's reflecting on his own on the Cuban Missile Crisis there.
Yeah.
And still not hesitate for a second in discharging it. Our brave combatants and military chiefs of our Revolutionary Armed Forces, taking part in heroic international missions, were close to becoming the victims of nuclear strikes against the Cuban troops. Deployed close to the Angolan south border from where South Africa resists racist forces at the time positioned. He goes on, he's talking some history there, but I'm neither a prophet nor a fortune teller. Nobody told me a word of what was to happen. It has all been the result of what I today described as logical reasoning. Fidel Castro doesn't write very well. But under my...
He's probably writing in Spanish and then
it's being translated. But he goes on and on and on about different things.
Let's go to another article.
He's predicting the fall of the United States. There's no doubt, however, that from Europe, the nuclear weapon of Great Britain and France allied with the United States and Israel, the same that enthusiastically imposed the resolution that will inevitably unleash the war. Which of the above-mentioned reasons will immediately become nuclear, are threatening the Russian territory, even though this country and China have done everything within their capabilities to prevent the conflict? The economy of the superpower will fall to pieces like a house of cards. American society is the least prepared to endure the catastrophe like the one the empire has created in the same territory where it started. We don't know which will be the effect on the environment of the nuclear weapons that will unavoidably explode in various parts of the world. And that is the least serious variant will happen in abundance. As for me, to advance a hypothesis would be pure science fiction.
Okay.
He's denying what he's saying, is what he's saying.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, so he's being political there.
Cat and mouse game.
Well, he is Fidel Castro, yeah. Gotta kind of watch what you say, or you bring your own country into. So let's get a little relief here. George Carlin and Bill Hicks, it says, tell it like it is. This is a 3-minute video here. Let's see what's going on.
Okay.
Paradigm shift. YouTube.
All you ever hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the fucking money. A fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything you can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank. You know how I describe the economic and social classes in this country? The upper class keeps all of the money, pays none of the taxes. The middle class pays all of the taxes, does all of the work. The poor are there just to scare the shit out of the middle class. Keep them showing up at those jobs. For all the same, I'll show you politics in America. Here it is right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute, there's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control. I have this feeling, man, because you know there's a handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. It's not a fucking, not a conspiracy nut. It's provable. Handful, very small elite running on these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I have this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what their promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialist capitalist scum fucks who got you in there, and you're in this smoky room, and this little film screen comes down, and a big guy's cigar, roll the film. And it's a shot of the Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before. It looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll. And then the film, the screen goes up, and the lights come up, and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First, we bomb Baghdad. You got it.
I think they died normal deaths.
They were young,
though. Well, Carlin was actually about 70, I think. Let's see. Still got quite a bit of time left here. Panic brews on golf course under suspicions of oil spill, media blackout of threats to public safety.
Yeah.
That's a good one to read. Read this?
Yeah. I think there are a lot of threats to public safety.
That we're not told of, yeah.
A quiet panic is brewing among residents of Florida's Gulf Coast. People are starved for updates and official information, and the lack of them is accelerating conspiracy theories and rumors of media blackout. Founded or not, to residents, they are quite real. Unconfirmed reports of evacuations have been circling the internet, along with suggestions that they will never be implemented because the scale is too enormous. Why announce a plan that can't be carried out? This has led to theories that human life is more expendable than political careers.
We read this. We read this on the show last night.
Yes.
Not this, but an article that was talking about the evacuation was absolutely impossible because it was about 20 million people, and so that they would just evacuate the privileged and let everybody else go. You know.
Official government websites like Deepwater Horizon Response and FEMA are not providing the news people are looking for. Additionally, the mainstream media seems to be aiming less information about the crisis rather than more, airing less information about the crisis.
And I'm going to say that's because BP just threw out $50 million in advertising money onto the broadcast networks to put ads out there, and you've seen them lessening the thing.
What a wonderful job they're doing.
Yeah, I've got a couple
cleanup.
Of doofuses from down there that are going, "Hi, I've been here for 50 years, and I have lots of faith in BP." You know, it's like, get out of here. You know, paid for by BP. You know, it's like, yeah, right. You know, it's like, yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. A case in point.
Since the Deepwater Horizon crisis began on April 20th, 2010, Chris Matthews has been devoting a great deal of time to covering the oil spill crisis on Hardball. Tonight, nothing, not a word. It was as if the millions of gallons of oil pouring into the Gulf, killing our ecosystem and countless thousands of animals, didn't exist.
That's because BP has put ads on, has paid millions of dollars in ads for MSNBC. That's why.
Other major networks like CNN have pushed news about the Gulf oil spill back to the third or fourth story. The worst environmental disaster in history is not important enough to be the lead story anymore. Here's a news flash for the mainstream media. The crisis is getting worse, not better. Oil continues to spill at an incredible rate. More than 1 million gallons of toxic corexit has been poured on top of it. And Hurricane Alex is now threatening to complicate recovery efforts and push more oil ashore. The website has been receiving emails from residents throughout Florida indicating fears of toxic fumes in the air, possible evacuations, and the dangers behind the massive gas bubble under the Macondo well that threatens to send a tsunami over the state of Florida at 600 miles per hour.
God. That's if that gas bubble blows, because it'll just blow the water right out of the right out of the ocean.
What is the fact behind the fears of the people in Florida? Have not been confirmed by the government or BP. They are all rooted in genuine threats to the safety of the public. The oil spill is growing. There are enormous amounts of pressure under the Deepwater Horizon well. The BOP is leaning 10 to 12 degrees, according to Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen. And the existence of the vast gas bubble under the well has been confirmed. While official statements may be designed to prevent mass panic, hiding information appears to be making people more nervous. In the midst of the worst oil disaster in history, now is not the time to leave it to people's imaginations to figure out if and when they are genuinely in danger. We're going to the second page.
This might be interesting.
Whistleblower to testify on oil spill fear. BP deliberately sinks oil well with Corexit as a cover-up. Okay.
Yeah, let's check this.
You end up in the environment if measures are not successful. Is that what I would call unimaginable?
Could they just bomb the hole? Bomb the hole where the oil is gushing out?
One of the concerns, which has been released, and so I can actually talk about
this, is
concern
now.
That the rock structure surrounding the pipe is not as strong and could, in fact, give out. And for I guess many of your very long-term listeners might remember, but in 1969, something like that happened here in Santa Barbara, where the oil, instead of coming up the pipe, went through the seabed and the rocks and came out of the seabed. And in many different areas, it's a much harder problem, to do and to solve, because you don't have a single pipe kind of seal. So one of the very big concerns of such a suggestion is that if that damaged a rock structure around the well pipe, the oil to come right through the seabed. And instead of a leak from a single point, we could have hundreds and hundreds of small leaks spread out over a large area, moving around, sealing those in 5,000 feet of water, making a cement pad is so much harder.
Why is only BP monitoring the spill size? Why aren't you the scientists?
I think that's an excellent question, and this is one of the areas that I and other team members have indicated. If we are to learn from this oil spill so that when there is another one, because the reality is that you can't engineer accidents away. There will be accidents no matter how much we try to prevent them. And the key, of course, is that when there is an accident, you don't let the damage occur. You keep the passenger and the automobile safe. You keep the ecosystem safe. And the scientists have not been able to come in and actually make the measurements so that we can learn from what happened so that when there is another accident somewhere on the planet, the best science and technology can protect the ecosystem, and we would be talking about a small but still horrible spill rather than the very large one that we're currently faced, where we don't seem to have any good ideas to really how to stop it.
Has the U.S. advanced in how it deals with these spills from decades ago?
So the answer to that is that the advancement has been painfully slow. During the event of a spill, typically, as we're seeing now, the scientists are kept away. We have to stop the spill right away. We don't have time to let the scientists come in and take a look. We scientists will come in after the fact, much later. There's government support for a few years, and then it completely dries up. And little bits of research still continue, and new developments are made. However, these tend not to be implemented. So there are new technologies available that are been developed, some of them with government money, but the industry has not done what they needed to do, which is continuously upgrade their boom systems, their monitoring systems to the latest technology, so that when an accident like this occurs, they have the latest technology. I think this latest technology we have today will be available for the next accident, but we'll be 20 years late at that point, too.
Isn't it just not just the industry's fault? I mean, it's up to the government to require this. The idea that both BP and the government were saying we couldn't have foreseen this, isn't that exactly what the government should be demanding of these oil companies doing deep offshore drilling? Is what is the catastrophe scenario and how are you going to deal with it?
That is exactly what the regulatory regime is supposed to ensure, and clearly has fell down in that regard in this case. But I do think this is one of the areas where, from industry's point of view, it's in their interest. I mean, BP is not going to come out of the current event with a big profit margin because they cut short on safety. They're going to be feeling a lot of pain for a long time, as President Obama has indicated, that he will ensure. And I think that particular bottom line pain that they're feeling is also a good wake-up call and incentive for safety to be brought to the forefront on industry and to have the support of government and activists and so on.
Dr. Leifer, we have to break. Before we do, though, explain your position in monitoring the oil flow and your key role in this oil spill in the monitoring of it.
So right now, I would have to say, well, first off, we're not monitoring anything. BP is providing video that they have are collecting, and currently they seem to be quite forthcoming. Previously, they were selecting the video for us to analyze, which meant that one could say BP was handing us what they wanted us to monitor. However, from the point of view, what there really should be at these kind of cyst sites is some acoustic methods, whether it's sonar or passive listening devices or other approaches, that continuously are monitoring and waiting for something to happen, and then would provide a non-stop steady data stream so we could actually be learn from what happens. If I have time, just to say really quickly, these things, they're not steady state. They belch. They have large eruptions. The blowout is kind of an example. You have to continuously monitor it to see what happens when you're not watching.
Dr. Ira Leifer, I want to thank you for being with us, researcher in the Marine Science Institute at the University of California, Santa Barbara, was the chief mission coordinating scientist on the NASA airborne response to the Gulf oil spill. This is Democracy Now.
Okay. That was Democracy Now, Amy Goodman. That was on another site, YouTube, rather. YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a pretty good, you know, pretty good thing.
Just here.
I don't know. Let's see if we can grab that.
Breaking news. Whistleblower to testify on your oil spill worst fear. BP deliberately sinks oil with Core Exist as a cover-up.
Yeah. Let's see what that's all about.
What paper is that from?
That's from the Political Spin Examiner. Political Spin Examiner. Look at this. Testimony before a Senate investigative panel this week is expected to reveal what may have suspected about about BP all along. They don't care about the environment, the animals that are dying, and the lives that are being destroyed by the deepwater oil spill. In a shocking interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper on June 29th, Allegiance Capital Corporation VP Fred McAllister said that BP is deliberately sinking oil with a toxic chemical disbursement core exit to hide the size of the oil spill, but sinking the oil before it can be collected. BP won't have to pay fines on it. McAllister said, "Everybody in Europe, where the standard practice is to raise the oil and collect it, is scratching their heads and quite honestly laughing at what's happening in the Gulf." He added, "Everyone is looking at us and wondering why we're allowing this to happen." McAllister is set to appear before a Senate investigative panel on Thursday and testify that BP's only interest regarding the deepwater oil spill is protecting their own financial interests. This statement explains why BP has been refusing offers of help from additional foreign skimmers. BP's fear is that independent skimmers would be able to count the number of gallons collected and thus provide the U.S. government with data to assess the spill rate and financial penalties against BP, according to McAllister. BP is in control of this situation. They are doing what's in the best interest of BP and their shareholders. So that's what's going on there.
It's all about money.
Yeah. Sons of bitches.
Yeah.
EPA, BP makes Gulf oil spill worse by using more toxic, less effective chemical. EPA, yeah, BP is...
Oh, I hate that company.
Yeah, me too. It's tapping second largest deposit in the world. Ooh. Okay. BP takes dead animals before they are photographed. Birds being beheaded. You want to see that one?
Oh, I don't think I want to look at that.
Yeah, largest deposit. What's that one? Instead
yeah.
Poor birds.
I don't want to.
That's horrible. BP oil leak. Fallen Deepwater Horizon was tapping the second largest oil deposit in the world. If there is a single aspect of the dangers of the BP oil leak, it lies in the question CEO Tony Hayward and other BP executives have been avoiding since the first drop of oil went rogue. How much oil is leaking? The real answer is, more than anyone wants to admit, because the well holds enough oil to make Saudi Arabian drillers jealous. The oil field that Deepwater Horizon had tapped is said to be the second largest deposit in the world. The site covers an estimated 25,000 square miles, extending from the inlands of Alabama, Florida, Louisiana, and Texas. The oil deposit is so large it could produce 500,000 barrels a day, for more than a decade. Part of the
reason the well exploded
is because the site contains large deposits of natural gas.
Right. So it was unsafe. Speculation as to why BP has tried to hide the amount of oil spilling may be twofold. There are legal issues and lawsuits in the works. The less said by BP now, the better it may play out for them in the future. the other, more alarming aspect is the event of total wellhead failure before relief wells are completed in August. Considering the size of the deposit, if BP loses control of the flow completely, the scope of the disaster would be unfathomable. I think it already is.
Yeah.
The New York Times has reported that scientists suspect the leak is thousands of times larger than what BP is reporting. Some estimates are as high as 1 million gallons a day. Rock particles, gas, and oil escaping under pressure are pushing against the capstone on the seafloor that surrounds the actual well. If this collapses, the canyon of oil will escape with a vengeance. Neither BP nor anyone else wants to say what will happen if the wellhead gives way or the seafloor around it caves in. All anyone is certain of is this is the worst-case scenario that everyone wants to avoid. Let's see.
I think that's just the...
It just might be video. There's a little...
They're just showing me...
Yeah. There's a little video
showing
you.
The oil spill, yeah. The amount of spill that's in...
Oh, boy.
Actually, coming out, it's not a very good video. All right. Oh, and they got a little calendar here, is he? Saying, what? Estimated gallons leaked as of June 30th. 82,869,000, and it's counting every second. It's got a gallon, or 2 gallons. So far they said it's 82,000,000, 869,067 gallons, counting. Current leak estimates is the Department of Energy. BP worst case scenario. 1,470,000 gallons a day. BP, was it? Yeah. Experts' worst, okay, case scenario. 2,520,000 gallons per day. Right, and up to 4.2 million gallons per day.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere between 2 to 4 million gallons a day. And man, they ain't gonna stop that shit. This is probably the worst thing I've ever heard of. So anyway, let's go back to. It's about our show's just about over.
Yeah, we only have a couple
of
minutes.
I wanted to see if there's anything else that's striking here.
Cover up of oil tar in the Pensacola Beach.
Let's check this one. This is.
Guys, this is Greg with your beach report for Tuesday morning, June 29th. You guys remember the pictures from last night? They've been out here working last night with heavy equipment. The oil's still here, right? But they're covering it up.
We're seeing where they're showing the... Pensacola, Florida, they're covering up the oil rather than
collecting
it up.
Anybody that comes out here on the beach needs to know this. They're just creating a toxic dump out here on Pensacola Beach.
Oh,
all they're doing is covering the oil up with sand. They're using heavy equipment, and you can see it in the distance.
There's big tracks.
I'm walking that way now. I'll be taking pictures and more video. But all they're doing is covering the oil up with sand. This is criminal.
Unbelievable. That explains why, and I guess they're fined by the amount of oil that they're collecting. That's collected. And
so they're
trying to cover it up, sink it, everything. Yeah. Airborne body scanners deliver radiation dose 20 times higher than the first thought, warns expert. Okay. And the show's just, we got about a minute left, but don't go into those full body scanners or you'll be barbecued.
Yeah.
Well, we're just about done. We want to thank everybody for joining us, and we appreciate your, we're at 61,000 listeners, and we really appreciate your listening to us. I want to thank you for joining us tonight, and we wish you a happy evening.
Good night, folks.
And you can join us Thursday. I'll be doing a show tomorrow night. And on Friday night, we have George Dixon, and we'll be talking about giants. And we have a special guest that will be joining us, then an expert in that area, about species of archaeological finds of a giant race. So we want to thank everybody, and good night.
Good night, folks.